You're listening to Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Up next, an orchid extravaganza. It's no secret that orchids are a passion and a hobby of mine. And up first this hour, Flora Lichtman is here with our video pick of the week. Welcome, Flora.
Hi, Ira.
And it's a special orchid video, right?
It's a very special orchid video. Jacques Dumais and Daniel Fulop looked at a genus called Catacetum. Now, I hadn't heard of this genus.
There are a lot of them in orchids.
Apparently, there are a lot of them. But it really caught Darwin's eye, it turns out. He dedicated a whole chapter of one of his books. He's a prolific guy, but a whole chapter to this genus because they do this really remarkable thing that you can see on our website at sciencefriday.com, which is they eject their pollinarium, this sort of long structure from the flower, the male flowers, onto the back of a bee that's moving. I mean,
Wait.
It's almost impossible.
There's a
to
bee
believe.
That has landed on the orchid.
The bee lands on the orchid. It's drawn to the orchid by the scent. Actually, it's not there for nectar. It's there for aromas, and it pushes a trigger hair, and the flower pops out this pollinarium, which spins through the air and then glues itself to the back of the bee. I'm excited because it's really remarkable to see.
And you can see this on a video pick of the week there on sciencefriday.com. There's video that Flora's put together. And it sticks to the bee?
It sticks to the bee. And then, you know, if all goes well for the orchid, the bee will take it to a female flower and pollinate that flower. But this is really just, we're just kicking off Orchid Fest. This is just the first part of it. In fact, later in the hour, we'll have Robert Fuchs on the line, who's been called the Orchid King. So if you have questions about growing your orchids, orchid misconceptions, now is the chance to get them cleared up. Our number is 1-800-989-TALK, 1-800-989-8255. But before we do that, more weird orchid news.
More. There's more.
But there's more. This week, a study came out in the journal, The Annals of Botany, about an orchid you probably wouldn't want in your living room because it's really smelly.
I have some nice smelling orchids, but I wouldn't want. What does it smell like?
It smells like rotting flesh. It smells like roadkill, literally.
Well, you don't know my living room, so you...
Yeah, I guess it's all relative, right? We have the author of this study who studied this orchid, Timo van der Neet. He's a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Cape Town in South Africa. And he's here to tell us a little bit more about this orchid. Welcome to the program, Timo.
Thank you very much.
So what's in it for the orchid? Why does it smell so bad?
We think that it does that to attract its pollinators. The special thing about this orchid, which is not so unusual for orchids but quite unusual for other flowering plants, is that it doesn't provide any reward for insects that visit it. So it can't lure insects to come to it by offering nectar or pollen as a reward. So it needs to find another trick to attract insects. And we think that it does that by mimicking carrion.
So it's deceiving the insects into coming, and why would insects, I guess these flies are usually attracted to roadkill, is that the idea?
That's correct. When we first arrived at our field site and set off this research, the first thing that struck us was, by smelling the orchid, how badly it smelled. But we initially didn't see any insects coming to the orchid, so we sort of laid a link with the smell of roadkill and try to attract flies in a different way by actually laying out roadkill and see whether we could see whether the flies that visit roadkill are the same ones that visit orchid.
This is real inglorious field work, laying out roadkill.
Not always pleasant.
But your grad students did it, right? You didn't lay out the roadkill.
I would have loved to, but it was just me.
And what did you find when you put the roadkill out? Did these insects come? And how did you tie that to the orchid then?
There's one very convenient thing about orchids, which you just mentioned in relation to the previous orchid you talked about, and that is that the pollen of orchids are aggregated into packages which are called pollinaria. And these packages often stand out. They're bright yellow and quite large compared to normal pollen grains. So when an insect has visited several flowers, you actually see these pollen packages sticking onto the insect, and even from a couple of meters away, so you don't have to hang around the roadkill too closely, you can actually see that some of these flies that visited the carrion also visited the orchid.
Oh, so you saw the pollen on the insects, and that told you that they had visited the orchid first. So is the scent, the roadkill smell, an exact replica? Is there a way to quantify smell?
We the laboratory that I work for at the University of KwaZulu-Natal is specialized in analyzing scent of flowers. And we use machines that are also commonly used in the perfume industry, where you can analyze the chemical profile of a certain bouquet of scent bouquet. And it turned out that the orchid produces about 6 chemical compounds, and the most important ones are sulfur compounds, which you also smell if you smell rotten eggs. And they are also the main compounds of carrion. So there's a very strong overlap between the scent bouquet of carrion and that of the plant, and we could actually chemically identify the compounds.
That's kind of amazing. It's hard to imagine how a plant evolves that capability to match scents. I mean, are its close relatives a little bit smelly?
Well, you're exactly right. They are a little bit smelly. So you can sort of think of a pathway where the carrion flower is sort of the ultimate product of a pathway of fly pollination. And the close relatives, like you say, aren't as badly smelling, but they certainly aren't pleasant either.
But this orchid then knows that it are flies attracted to it because it smells like carrion. Did flies evolve with it during its lifetime so that, you know, they have a symbiotic relationship here?
No, this is not the case. It's a one-way traffic, basically, because the flies don't get anything out of it. And in fact, there were situations where flies had visited so many flowers that the burden of the pollen packages wore them down so badly that they couldn't fly anymore. So the fly would do much better of not visiting the flower. But we think that the cues that the plant produce are so strong that the fly simply can't afford to ignore those cues.
Fascinating. Timo, thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Timo van der Niet is a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Cape Town in South Africa. But Ira, don't worry, there's more to Orchid Fest.
Wait, there's more?
We have Robert Fuchs, who's the president of RF Orchids in Homestead, Florida. And he actually is joining us from the Barbados Orchid Society show. So we have someone on the site of an orchid show.
I am so jealous.
Robert, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
So what's the scene like down there?
Yeah.
Well, it's very warm, for one thing. The show is beautiful. They have it every 2 years, and they nurture their plants, and they grow them, and they get them ready for exhibition. And this is their biannual show, bi-yearly show. And they have just done a spectacular job this year. We've just finished the American Orchid Society judging, which I'm the chair of the team here for the American Orchid Society, and one of the plants that they had grown for several years received a first-class certificate, and actually it's the first time or anybody from Barbados has ever received a first-class certificate, so they are elated.
Do you groom certain plants for show? Is it like show dogs?
Yeah, it's like show dogs. You groom them, you stake them, you tie them up, you want them to open up to absolutely to the best of their perfection, and you bring them in, and we have a group of AOS judges who are here from the American Orchid Society from all over the U.S., and with the local barbarian people here from Barbados. And they are just, we have gone through and judged them and given them ribbons and picked out the best. And then we do the AOS judging, which is a really sophisticated judging system.
You know, a lot of people think it's so hard to grow orchids. I grow orchids myself. I have my prize Vanda on our Science Friday Facebook page. I understand you're a Vanda aficionado, just between you and I. No one else knows what we're talking about. But people, they're not as hard to grow as people think they are. And they've been hybridized so much that you can just about grow them anywhere, right?
Yeah, orchids are actually, they're so easy to grow. And, you know, they were first brought over to Europe in the 1600s. They used the bulbs for packing material. And then some of these bulbs actually started growing. And if they've been in a boat for 2 months, and they're very, very easy to grow. There are the more people kill orchids with too much love, and especially too much water than anything else.
Robert, we have a listener on the line, Terry from Lewis, Delaware, who needs some advice. Okay. Hi, Terry. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a, I think it's called Margaret Dagenham. It's an absolutely gorgeous orchid that has a beautiful spicy aroma. My son gave it to me about 15 years ago for Mother's Day, and I transplanted it into a larger pot at some point. And the roots are all growing up around the outside of the pot, and I'm afraid now to move it in because I don't know how to avoid breaking those roots.
Okay, is it a Cattleya, Phalaenopsis?
Oh, I'm very sorry. I don't know.
But what shape are the leaves?
Okay, does it have bulbs?
Yeah.
What?
Does it have bulbs?
They're sort of swollen.
It kind of creeps and grows across the pot, right?
Yeah.
Not just straight up. Okay. That is probably in the Uncinodi group. And the main thing about repotting almost any orchid that is kind of general is that you need to make sure the plant is in growth, make sure it's growing. Either a new growth is coming up, and especially in the Phalaenopsis alliance, make sure either a new a leaf is coming out of the center or a bloom spike. The plant has to be active when you repot it. If it's not, the plant will go backwards.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, Terry.
All right. Thank you very much.
Is this a good season to start repotting? Is this the time of the year?
This is the best season. Springtime, the plants, especially in the Vandaceous Alliance, the plants have been sitting for several months in kind of low light and short days, and now the days are starting to pick up and it's get along. Hold just a second.
Sir.
This is what happens when you're at an orchid
they're
show.
They're actually moving some tables around. Sorry about that. At the show here. Anyway, this as the days get longer, this is the time to repot. Absolutely, positively, the springtime is the time, and then especially in the Vandaceous Alliance, the plant can get better established and get it prepared for the winter because it has all summer to grow.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Science Friday
from NPR.
Robert, but not all. Do all orchids need soil? I feel like I've seen them without soil.
No, there's two different types. There's epiphytic orchids that grow on trees, and there's terrestrial orchids that actually grow in the ground. And orchids grow at every state of the United States except Hawaii, grow in the wild. We have a lot of orchids that grow in Minnesota, which is a state flower, by the way. And then we have orchids that grow in Alaska, and those are all terrestrial orchids that go dormant, like a lily, bulbs or things go dormant in the wintertime, then they come back up. And as you get closer to the equator, you have the tropics and the subtropics and the tropical areas, and those are areas where plants grow in the trees and are epiphytic.
It's just a huge diversity within this group, right? I mean, I read it was more species than double the number of species of birds there are orchids.
Yes. Unbelievable. Unbelievable, the diversity, the color range, the size from a pinpoint to, 12 inches across, 14 inches across. So, it's just absolutely unbelievable. It's such an incredible group of orchids. And most people get excited about the corsage orchid. That's the first one they see, the big Cattleya. And then they start, if they're interested in it, they'll start studying it, and they'll say, my goodness, what a great group of plants.
And I've seen them in the big box stores for like $20 now.
Right.
Some of these is it okay to buy them there, and you don't have to go to a fancy flower store?
Well, it's okay to buy them there, but the thing that the box stores are stores that are mass producing orchids, and they are a lot of them are filled with hormones. The plants are there, and they're growing them as a pot plant, like a mum plant. They want you to enjoy it and flower it out and then throw it away and buy another one. And so the reputable orchid nurseries who grow plants and nurture plants and keep them growing, and if you're really a good hobby grower or a professional grower, you're going to buy from a firm that has grown the plant from seed to maturity and can tell you how to actually take care of it.
Is there a way to select the best orchid? If I'm at a nursery, how do I know which one's healthy?
You want to look for good, clean, green leaves, no blotches or lines on them, because that's the sign of it could be a virus plant. You want to see nice, strong roots and a nice, strong, well-established plant. A lot of the plants that we find in the box store are plants that come out of little 3-inch pots, and they put them in a 6-inch pot with a lot of sphagnum moss, and the plant is not established. and therefore the shock of being transplanted and the shock of being put into a box for a week and then been put out on the shelf in the air conditioning with not the proper watering, the plant obviously goes into shock.
We have, I think, time for one very, very quick question. Nancy from Genesee, Idaho, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks. I have four orchids. I have a big Brassia, a Cattleya, and two Phalaenopsis.
Great.
And I can't get my... I have one phal that I bought in bloom, and it's still blooming. Mm-hmm. But my other three are all about a year old, and they haven't rebloomed, and I'm not sure what I'm doing wrong.
Well, they probably... The Brassia and the Cattleya need more light than the Phalaenopsis. A good thing to think about is the wider the leaf, the more shade the plant can take. If the leaf is narrower, it needs more sunlight for the photosynthesis to take place. So maybe, you know, the Phalaenopsis readily rebloom as long as you don't overwater. Now, we water our Phalaenopsis only once a week. It depends what they're growing in, but once a week is plenty for that. But they probably need more light. You need to give a little bit more sunlight, especially this time of year.
Give us a thanks for the call. Give us a website we could go to if we want to start now after hearing this, raising our and growing our own orchids. What's the best place to learn about it?
I would say probably the American Orchid Society. Mm-hmm. Now, we have culture on our website, which is info@rforchids.com. But the American Orchid Society is a premier organization in America, and they also have a wonderful website, AmericanOrchidSociety.com it is, and they have also culture and an incredible publication they put out.
Robert, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, and it was my pleasure. I really enjoyed talking with you folks.
Thanks. Robert Fuchs is the president of RF Orchids in Homestead, Florida, joining us from the Barbados Orchid Society show.
Thank you, Flora, for the Orchid Fest today.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, RF.
You're welcome. Flora Lichtman is our video pick of the week. Chooser. She's our multimedia editor. So go to our website at sciencefriday.com, and you can watch this incredible video of an orchid snapping over a fly. It's just kind of interesting stuff. You've never seen it before. And while you're at our website, you can go to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast, both audio and video, and you can download our Android apps and take them with you and our iPhone apps. And also join us Twitter. The whole week long we'll be on Twitter, at SciFry, our Facebook page, /SciFry. And you can talk to us and communicate with us. Also, go to our website at sciencefriday.com, and please join our survey there. We want to collect enough information so that the folks out there know what we'd like to have on the program. We want to hear from you. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flato in New York.